All right, so taking a look at some of the key ingredients of that satisfying sex life, particularly, you know, as time goes on. And they were mentioning three things. Well, four. Three. Penile-vaginal sex. Really important to have the penis inside the vagina. Penile-vaginal sex. Affection. And the time spent in the relationship. What else would you say is very important to the sexual fulfillment that we haven't talked about yet? How about open communication? That's right, talking about it, talking. Isn't it interesting that communication is so important in a relationship? And that includes the sexual part of the relationship. In Dr. Velton's study, open communication about sexual wishes and frequencies had a positive effect on the quality of sex that the participants reported. Remember I was talking about getting on the same page? You know, we're talking about what's going to work for both partners. And so again, what if one partner is okay having sex three times a month? The other partner would like to have sex five or six times a month, maybe seven times per month. They need to have a meeting of the minds. And here's the thing now. What if the one partner who would like to have sex about seven times per month doesn't know that the other partner only wants sex about three times per month, is satisfied with sex three times per month, and the partner who wants sex three times per month does not know that the other partner would like to have sex about seven times per month because they've never talked about it? Some of the most obvious things are not that obvious to someone who's not able to read our minds. And so we need to talk about even some of the simplest things. How much is enough for you? How many times, how frequently is satisfactory to you? How much frequency is really more than you'd want? Need to be talking about it, not assuming. And look, it's your business. You both have a right, not only a right, but a need to know, to talk about it. In Professor Graham's study, participants who found it easy to talk about sex with their partner were more interested in sex. Professor Graham said that the findings that she and her colleagues came up with really underlined that open communication with a partner about sex is one of the most important things you can do to try to maintain sexual interest in the relationship. Sexual desires and preferences are by nature intrinsically personal and individual. Research in the field is complex, and while studies can show associations and trends, they won't be able to tease apart the reasons for an individual's sexual satisfaction. One of the things that Professor Graham says is that she really doesn't think that there's any secret, per se, to long-term sexual satisfaction. Human sexuality is too diverse and fluid for that to be the case. But open communication about sex with the partner should go some way to preventing sexual problems from developing. Talking about sex may be a good starting point. Finding a way to fit sex into the pressures of daily life may be challenging, but affection and time together might well help. I'm just wondering, you suppose it's worth it to have that conversation with each other? Even those of you who have been together for a while, and when I say for a while, 5 years, 10 years, 18 years, who knows whether or not there's some changes taking place. Maybe one of you is developing a little bit less of an interest in sex. Maybe the other is developing a stronger interest in sex. Maybe both of you are developing a stronger interest in sex and you're just not realizing it. What if one of you is thinking, even if on a subconscious level, ah, man, you know, I sure wish we could have sex in some environment other than our bedroom all the time. Bedroom's okay, but this environment. I just need to be someplace else having sex. Well, why don't you all talk about that and entertain the idea of spending even one or two nights at a hotel, even though it may be in the same city where you live? In other words, you don't necessarily have to drive a long, long distance, 3, 4, 5 hours to get in a different environment and then drive 3, 4, 5 hours back home. It may be as simple as getting a hotel room in the same city. I mean, think about this. Some people who decided they're going to take a chance on messing things up, messing their marriage up, will just change up by going to a hotel and just being in a hotel room in an environment different from their home, although with someone they're not married to, with the person who is not their spouse. That change in scenery. Talk about that. Hey, maybe we don't have to spend a whole lot of money, even if it's just one night. Maybe you get there at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. You know, try to make good use of the room since you are paying for it, and check out the next day. One night. I mean, if, you know, you're really trying to, you know, cut the cost a bit, that's one way to do it. All right. Sexual satisfaction. Sexual fulfillment. All right. Let's start on another conversation that we will be looking into, and we'll continue this. I know we're not going to finish it today. We'll probably continue it this Saturday, but want us to take a look at tax cuts, tax costs, tax cuts, tax costs. Mr. Wang and Joel Friedman letting us know what this is about. Center for Budget Policy and Priorities, along with the Joint Committee on Taxes. They're going to be on taxation, going to be letting us know that all that glitters is not necessarily gold. I know a lot of people get really excited and animated in a positive way when they hear about tax cuts coming down the pipe. Tax cuts, they're going to cut our taxes. And a lot of people start feeling relieved just hearing about it. It hadn't even been put into play yet. They're just hearing about it. And they're thinking, oh, man, somebody's finally coming to our rescue. Well, the center says that key Senate Republicans have announced that they will reportedly allow the Senate to move forward with tax cut legislation that could lose $1.5 trillion in revenue over the next decade. If recent proposals from President Trump and Republican congressional leaders are any guide, the tax cut will be skewed toward high-income households who have reaped most of the income gains of recent decades. A lot of you have been complaining and commiserating over the fact that your income has not gone up like it should have. And a lot of you have been complaining that your wages, your incomes have not gone up enough over the last several years. For some of you, the last several decades. You've also complained that the rich are just steadily getting richer and richer and richer, while little to nothing good is happening for you and other people like you. Well, you have to remember what I've shared with you a number of times before. Situations do not create themselves. So when you start talking about or hearing about or reading about stagnant wages, you need to remember wages don't make themselves stagnant. Wages don't cause themselves to rise either not at all or only a very little. Wages don't bring that situation about. People in power to make decisions cause wages to be stagnant. Whether that be the people who pass legislation or the people who vote for the people who pass the legislation that allow wages to be kept stagnant. Or whether it be the decision makers, the politicians, and we the people who vote for them and support them in their decisions. Isn't it interesting how we can make decisions that harm ourselves, that harm us, and then complain about it? And do this election after election after election. Make sure that we support the people who are going to make the decisions that bring us pain, and then we cry about the pain that we asked for. $1.5 trillion loss in revenue over the next decade. Just hearing that, do you think that will be good for us or bad for us? Let's look at that some more Saturday. In the meantime, let's take a look at, just ask ourselves, do we need to rethink our political positions? Just think about it.